1971. Pike Place Market. Seattle, Washington. There was one store which eventually changed American culture as we know it. The store, named for a character that most of us don't know, from Herman Melville's Moby Dick, was Starbucks. And from that store, 15,000 Starbucks stores currently exist worldwide. There's something that many of us enjoy, many of us know others that enjoy, but is it really mutter? Are we allowed to go into a store, Starbucks, 7-Eleven, Dunkin' Donuts, and purchase a black coffee, a coffee with milk, a cafe latte, some of the fancier coffees? Until recently, minhag ha'olam was to do so. People point out, coffee is the one beverage that most kashrus organizations tell us you can buy anywhere. Maybe if you're somewhere in Europe that you can't trust the milk, you can buy black coffee, cafe espresso. But we presume usually you can buy coffee anywhere. Recently, though, specifically spearheaded by the CRC, the wonderful kashrus organization Osik B'Tzarchei Tzibur in Chicago, people second guess this practice. Mutter or usser? Maybe we should change. Tonight we're going to discuss in the shir Yulin Nishmas Imi Marasi, Marasi Yocheved Pesha Bas Hillel, Aleha Shalom, whose 8th Yahrzeit is tonight, is it really mutter? Is it really usser? We're not going to discuss tonight, as a disclaimer, the very important issue of Maris Ayin. Am I allowed to go into a store that's known for primarily treif foods and buy a coffee? That's an issue which is really judged on a case-by-case basis. We're going to presume that a Starbucks or a 7-Eleven is a place people go for kosher and non-kosher beverages, non-kosher foods, therefore there's no concern of Maris Ayin. You can thank heaven for 7-Eleven, whether you keep kosher or not. What about the beverage itself? Mutter or usser? May I do so? The first concern is a kashrus concern which predates any American store altogether. The minhag in Europe was that people drank beverages that were made by non-Jews. And there was a concern the postum raised beyond the issue of kashrus that we usually think about. The Shulchan Aruch tells us in source 1, Davar she'eino nachal kmo shu chai. Anything which is not eaten raw, v'dam ola al shulchan malachim, and something you would serve at a king's table, is subject to the rules of bishulachim. Stripping to the next line in source 1, last 5 words, aser mishum bishulei avdur halachim. It's prohibited because of bishulachim. We can't have something cooked by a non-Jew if it's a chashuv food. If it's Ola Shulchan Malachim, kings would eat it. If it's something which you don't eat raw. Whether you like coffee or you don't like coffee. We all know that coffee is not eaten raw. You have to brew it. You have to roast it and you have to brew it. And it's something which you can serve. Kings, queens serve coffee. It's a very chashuv beverage. Therefore, it seems to be a prime suspect to the issue of Vishalachim. Yet, that never crosses anyone's mind. How do we have coffee? Is it cooked by a non-Jew? Whether you call them a barista, like they do in Starbucks nowadays, or an old-fashioned innkeeper. Lamaisa, puffy is made by non-Jews. Chazal were concerned about Nebuch, the terrible tsar of intermarriage. He gave us a harchaka to make sure that we stay away from things that are taught by non-Jews. How do we ever have puffy? It seems the answer, as the Achronim points out, really lies in Tosfos. Tosfos says, Masechta B'Zohar, the Famanel from the Beis, the rudimentary solution to the problem of Bishalachim. Says Tosfos, you know, let's take a break from coffee for a second and think about beer. What bracha is beer? Shakol. Shakol. Isn't that strange? What's the main ingredient in beer? Wheat, grain. We get rid of beer on Pesach. We sell it before Pesach. Shemi mizonos. Koshi yesh bracha mishnei nedagon. Beer is mostly mizonos. But we all make shakol and beer. Says Tosfos, I'll tell you. Lamaisa, what's the main ingredient? If you take a bottle of beer and drink it, what are you really drinking? Water. Of course, the flavor comes from grain, but you're really drinking water. Says Tosfos, Od yesh tamach el hatir. I'll tell you why shechar is both shehakol and immune from bishalachum. The ain immune from bishalachum. Zichi hechi datzvua b'telo dabi hamayim. Just like the grain is bottle and water. Beer is flavored, but it's 99% water. Linyan berchas shakol, that's why it's shakol niyam b'dvaro. Halchanami b'telo linyan b'isr bishul. Therefore, it's immune from bishul akum as well. Why? Because l'maisa, when I drink beer, what am I drinking? I'm drinking water. You're right, the flavor comes from hops, comes from grain. But what I'm drinking is water. Therefore, it's shakol. Therefore, there's no bishul akum. And the Achronim point out, this is probably most famous nowadays in a tshuva from Avadi Yosef, but it's an idea that is found earlier than him and in other svarim as well. Lamaisa, what's the main ingredient in coffee? Water. Since it's mostly water, there's no concern of bishul akum. Because we said, what are the two criteria for bishul akum? Something which is not eaten raw, or something which you serve, a king will serve you at his house. Water, of course, a king would serve you at his house, but is water eaten raw? Of course. So since water is eaten raw, coffee is essentially water. Coffee is shakol, as beer is, and coffee is not bishul akum. However, there's another concern surrounding coffee before we get to the major issue of kashrus per se. In order to really experience the Starbucks phenomenon, it's not enough to go buy a latte and take it out and walk on the street. You have to sit down in a tiny little table like they have in Manhattan, take the Wall Street Journal or New York Times they have, sit down, try not to get involved in someone else's Wi-Fi connection that's sitting right next to you, and enjoy your latte. That's the Starbucks experience. The problem is, that is base hamishtaos shel nachr. It's a non-Jewish place of drinking, it seems. And that's usur, according to the Gemara, quoted in Shulchan Aruch. Says the Shulchan Aruch in source 3. Another attempt that Chazal made, gzeira that Chazal made in order to help us refrain chas v'shalom from intermarriage, is that we can't have beer in a bar. And there's two problems. There's two prohibitions that Chazal instituted in the concern of having beer from a bar. Number one is you can't have beer in a bar. Number two, in a bar. Beer in a bar. Kol sheichar shel kusim, any beer made by a non-Jew, asur mishum chasnus. It's prohibited because of intermarriage. Source 3. Ve'eino asur el b'machom mechiraso. The only place that is prohibited is actually in a bar. So in sharp contrast to the rule we just talked about, bishul akum, which is prohibited for any foodstuff, this only applies in a bar per se. The Shulchan Aruch continues, if you bring it home, then it's mutter. But the Shulchan Aruch tells us that there are certain drinks that Chazal prohibited having in a bar. Now, from that alone, Starbucks should not be a problem. In fact, the Shulchan Aruch goes through a discussion what type of beer. It seems, according to the letter of the law in Shulchan Aruch, our beer, which is made from hops and grain, would not be subject to this rule at all. Sheikha Shel Rimonim, types of beer they had from other fermentations were really included in the Gzeirah of Chazal. In fact, those that are lawyers might know it. I'm told it's a fairly common phenomenon. When you interview at a law firm, after your interview, they take you for a l'chaim on beer, sometimes in a bar. So strictly speaking, that should be mutter. That's not the type of beer that was prohibited. Until the Chachmas Adam enters the scene. Says the source, for Chachmas Adam, written by the Chai Adam, stepping to the second line, kaveh, coffee, the shokolada, and hot cocoa, of course, barring any kashrus concerns, mutter lishtos beis hanachri. You're allowed to drink that in a non-Jewish house, because Chazal only specifically made a prohibition of a certain type of beer. Any other beverage is totally permissible. Says the Chachmas Adam, Ach ba'avoneseinu harabim nebuch. Oy! Bizman hazeh, intermarriage is so prevalent. Kama kukulim bamizeh, nebuch. How many terrible things happen when people go to fraternize with non-Jews in a place of a drink? You're right! It's mutter to have coffee and hot cocoa in a place which is non-Jewish. That's shuras hadin. But use your head. How could you bring yourself to such an environment? Al-Kain, Kalasher bo reach Torah. Anyone that has the smell of Torah, Yarchet mizeh, should stay far away. Mi lichnos leveteyem, lishtos eze mashte sheyeh. To drink anything. And when Marav Rabbi Rav Shachter Shlita quotes this Chayadam, this Chachmas Adam, he says, even water, we don't drink with non-Jews. Based on this Chachmas Adam, Marav Rabbi Rav Shlita points out that sometimes there's a machokas ha-daters, what the best way to spend the first date is. In days of yore, you always go to a restaurant, but that is passé. You don't go to a restaurant on a first date. Maybe not a fifth date. What's minigolem? You go to a lounge. Hotel, the lounge. Nachas shom a bar, call it a lounge. It sounds better. Lamaisa, kol asher bo reach Torah. Yarchit mizeh. There are those that point out, no. The concern is intermarriage. If you're on a date, you better watch yourself. Chas v'shalom. Don't talk to anyone else. There's no concern. But Lamaisa, both Rav Shechter and Rav Willig, quote, this Chachmas Adam halacha l'maisa. And I've heard from both of them years ago. They're very reluctant to tell a person that you're allowed to drink in Starbucks. Nothing to do with the kashrus of the food or the drink. But that's the Chachmas Adam. Kol asher bo reach Torah, yarchit mizeh. And you'll go and socialize with your co-workers in a Starbucks, relaxed environment. Oy va'avoy. Shamu shamayim ozos. But it's interesting to note, this is based on Mishchos Shal Nachri. It's not Shuras Hadin. This Chachmas Adam clearly is not telling us that's what Chazal had in mind. He's saying we should engender a sensitivity within ourselves. It's not an appropriate environment. It might be, if a Jew owns a specific place which people fraternize in, that would also be prohibited. Even though according to the halakha that's okay, it's not appropriate. But let's take a step back for a second. Who owns Starbucks? It's really a publicly traded company on the NASDAQ. SUBX, but it's well known that Howard Schultz was the one who took Starbucks from that one store in Seattle and made it into the shame dover that it is. Howard Schultz, Jewish. Now, Lamaisa, since it's a publicly traded company, he only owns 4% of the stock. So he's not really the owner altogether. But you hear, it's not so pashut. Is it really based on Mishos Shal Nachrim? Well, Howard Schultz was sort of the owner. There's no franchise. You can't buy Starbucks. Starbucks is Starbucks. Starbucks company owns all the Starbucks. So it's not really based on Mishos Shal Nachrim. Maybe it's Shal Schultz. Maybe it's of a publicly traded company. But you can hear that even according to the concept of the Chachmas Adam, it's not really based on Mishos Shal Nachrim. It's not owned by a Nachri. On the other hand, one has to be careful. If the Chachmas Adam doesn't mean this alpith halacha, he's saying, in general, we should be sensitive. We can't go schmoozing with people in that environment. It's an important thing to be aware of. I'm not saying asur mutter, but the concept is something which is important to keep in our brain. Turning to page 2, we're going to move to the issue at hand. The issue raised by the CRC from Chicago of kashrus of Starbucks. The CRC came out with a major article. They did tremendous research, months and months and months, going to Starbucks, both the kiosks in local Stop and Shops and Albertsons and other stores, and to Starbucks stores that are just stores that sell coffee and sell food. And they investigated the process detail by detail as to how Starbucks coffee conducts their business. They came out with an article which is both on their website, that's the link you see here, and also published in the most recent journal of Halakha Contemporary Society, the RJJ Journal. It's the same article, it's a little bit more lengthy on the website with a few more ha'aris at the end, in which they're very reluctant to allow people to buy Starbucks. And it's important to realize there's a two-pronged argument they're making. Most of what we're going to discuss tonight is Halakha. But a large part of what they're bothered by is Hashkafa. For example, they say, let's say a person told you, I'll go into your house with a ham sandwich on a paper plate and just leave it on the island in your kitchen. What would our visceral reaction to that be? Don't bring treif into my kitchen. Is anything usser? Are the fumes going to go from the ham into our dishes, chas v'shalom? No. What if they told you, I'm going to take a glass plate that has ham on it and go into your kitchen and your sink and wash it with cold water. I'll wash it off afterwards, after I ate the ham sandwich. What would we say? No way. Stay away from my sink with your ham sandwich. Is that necessarily usser? No. Cold. It's going to go down the drain. But they're trying to point out there's a certain sensitivity people have. We don't bring trade things into our lives. And therefore, part of their argument, even though you might have halakhic reasons to say that everything is mutter, they're bothered by the overall hashtafet issue. It's just not right. Lo ye'else chain bimutomein. We're not going to address that argument directly, because that's a sensitivity that's important for people to have in general. We don't want to focus on the main point, the purely halakhic aspect. Is Starbucks mutter or else? Lamaisa, coffee is coffee. We already got rid of the issue of Bishalakim. Coffee is just coffee. There's nothing treif about coffee anywhere in the world. It doesn't grow in Israel. They have to be concerned about Trumas and Maestros. So what's the real concern? After reading the entire article that the CRC put out so beautifully and so eloquently, the major concern is the cleanup. Most Starbucks stores sell non-kosher products and kosher products. Therefore, if a person orders a basa b'chalav sandwich or a treif sandwich and have it on their table, they might be at their end of the store, and you're having your latte at your end of the store, but at the end of the day, the two meet in the sink and the dishwasher. Very serious concern. So they went quite elaborately through the process of cleanup in Starbucks to see is there any really kosher concern that exists. And they point out, source 5, as we would hope, just about all equipment gets washed in a three-compartment sink when it gets dirty, or at the end of the day. But how is the sink made? This is a Starbucks, not just any old sink. They have a three-compartment sink. So, source 6. Dishes first soak in a hot soapy solution. Everything goes into hot soap first. Hot with soap. Hot. Big cautious concern. Then plain hot water without soap. And then sanitized with water and sanitizing solution. And 7, the wash sink, number 1, automatically has soap. We can't say this person is tired. Come on. The Department of Health was here yesterday. They're not going to check again. He'll forget the soap. Soap doesn't automatically. But we're having a ham sandwich plate mixed together with a cup they're going to prepare my coffee in an hour or tomorrow morning. Very serious concern. So ostensibly, the simplest kula here is one word. Soap. Soap. Soap's one of the greatest inventions, not only for kitchens in terms of cleanliness, but for kitchens in terms of kashrus. The Shulchan Aruch tells us in Source 8, kol davar shetayim upagum, anything which tastes terrible, eino asur taravaso, does not make something treif if it falls in. For example, let's say I decided to go to a non-kosher store and buy a ham sandwich. Chas v'shalom, if I eat that ham sandwich, I'm in violation of a Torah prohibition. What if I leave that ham sandwich out for a month? So it's rancid, it's disgusting, it's putrid, and then I eat it. There's no more Torah prohibition. That's pogum. that's so putrid, it's not considered food. The same thing the Shulchan Aruch tells us applies from the Gemara, not only in food that is there itself, but even in food which tastes great, but I add it to another mixture. So the food itself tastes great, but if I add it to a mixture, it's going to taste terrible, that also makes it mutter. If I take tomatoes that are treif, let's say, not trumas and isos, and I throw them into ice cream will still be kosher, because tomatoes and ice cream don't taste so great. So the Shulchan Aruch tells us anything which tastes terrible can't make something treif. No same time with gam. Makes it taste terrible. Says the Shulchan Aruch, Yirayali, it seems to me that if you have a big vat of flesh of dishes and throw in milk of dishes, all of them have residue. There's meat and milk all together in boiling hot water. And you add soap, or the Shulchan Aruch talks about ether, you add ash, everything is mutter. Why? Because in order for the milk to mix with the meat, it has to go through the water. What's in the water? Soap. It tastes terrible. That's mutter. Which would mean, in our kitchens, we would never mix milk and meat together in such a fashion. Let's say, by mistake, it's late at night, it's Thursday night, I'm getting ready for Shabbos, I'm cleaning up the kitchen at 1 o'clock in the morning, and I take a flesh of sponge, which has meatball residue on it. It's bright orange, with tomato sauce and meatballs. Put soap on it, and mistakenly use really hot water and wash my milk of dishes. Oh, I feel so terrible afterwards. Did I trade up the milk of dishes? Mutter Damri. Mutter. Because in order for the meatball sauce to come into the milk of dishes, it has to go through soap. Soap is a mechanism which makes everything okay. It's no time of gam. Makes everything putrid. Of course, the sponge might be treif, but the dishes are okay. So, that's part of our solution, number one, for 6 and 7. In the three-department sink, when you have the treif and the kosher in the same sink, what medium is there as well? Soap! Mutter l'damri. So that should look aura help in compartment number one. What about compartment number two? What about the second situation? There's no soap there anymore. Mutter rasser. You might say, well, all the residue of ham is no longer on the dishes. Yeah, but we know that non-kosher flavor doesn't only stay on the surface of a tli. What happens to the non-kosher flavor? It goes into a tli. That's why we have milk of dishes and flesh of dishes. So, it's a big problem. In the second bath, you're right, there's no more be'en, there's no more actual ham. But look over, there's a situation which is being mixing kosher and non-kosher dishes together. Is that a concern or not? For this, we're going to go on a slight tangent. The minhag of most from people nowadays is, number one, to redo kitchens, of course, and number two, to make sure that they have nebuch, only two sinks, halavai, three sinks, four sinks, nesilas adayim sinks, the more the merrier. But once upon a time, there used to be minhag in Klal Yisrael to have one sink in the kitchen. What do most people do when they have one sink in the kitchen? How do they wash milk and flesh of dishes? What do you... Oh, so there's two different minhagim in Klal Yisrael. You can find both of them on Main Street, in Town Variety, or Amazing Savings. Most stores and from communities have different options for people to buy. Either you'll have the big dish basins, two different colors for milk and flesh of dishes to soak the dishes, or you'll have the racks that line the sink. Two different ways that people do things. Sometimes people just use the racks. Sometimes people use the entire basin. Which one is more correct? Depends who you ask. This issue was first raised in print by the Chishon of a Rebbe. In Source 10, the Minchas Yitzchak, Dayan Weiss, the Av Bezdin of the Eidah Charedis, posted from Yerushalayim, in Chered Beis Siman Kuf, was asked, now look carefully at the date. Yom Hei Etev, it's in the summer, Tuf Shin Yud Zayin, 1957. He was still in Manchester. Written, the Shaila was raised by Tvod Kedushas Taroso, Rav Shomi Yechezkel Shradra, Ruben Halbisham Shlita, Hadmar Mitishinov. Do I need to have two sinks or not? 1957. So says Menachas Yitzchak, cutting his whole tshuva to one line, source 11, Benidim didan, in our case, Tishkiach harbe, it's very common that you put milchers in the sink, and fleshers in the sink, and hot water in the sink. Of course you need to have something, either two sinks, or a basin for milchers, and a basin for fleshers. Going to the end of source 11, Nire, the last six words, Denetra hamaschela mibliyas basar v'chalav. The sink becomes treif from basar v'chalav. You better have some sort of lining, or you don't have a treif house. So says the Menachas Yitzchak. And he spearheaded the revolution, whether you know it or not, to have different basins in your house. If you have a sink, if you drop this way, or now you have a basin in your house, in your sink, one for milchus, one for cheshuvs, comes from this tshuva, 1957. However, Rav Moshe Feinstein disagreed. Rav Moshe Feinstein wrote this in Yerodei Chelet Aleph, source 12. When is this tshuva written? Hey Elul, Tav Shin Yud Ches. That's towards the end of the summer, 1958. Approximately a year later. Who is the Shoel? Who asked the Shaila to Rav Moshe Feinstein? None other than Rav Shalom Yechezkel Shraga Ruben Halberstam Ha'admar Mi Tishinev. Whoa. Now it's interesting, parenthetically, to look and see how many differences there are in the spellings of the name Halberstam and Tishinev between Rav Moshe and the Menachas Yitzchak. And then after Minas Halacha Lamaisa, as far as how to spell things in Yiddish. The precise way to spell it could be it comes from different dialects. Lamaisa, the exact same Shoel, this great Don and Tzaddik, the Tishinev of a Rebbe, asked Menachas Yitzchak, and he asked Rav Moshe. And Rav Moshe writes, Lamaisa, you're right. It's definitely better. Mios Tova Tifrira. It's a good idea to have two basins. But says Rav Moshe in source 13, Ava Basher Shu Tircha Gedola. It's a big Tircha, two basins. Va'anoshim ha'ostros b'zeh, and the women or men that are washing dishes, yomru, they'll say, Rebbe, kama harachta aleinu, how hard are you making it for us? Two basins for every sink? I'll now go through tshuva telling you the actual halacha, says Rav Moshe. And Rav Moshe comes up with an unbelievable psak, halacha l'maisa. Rav Moshe's psak is that all you need really, really is one sink, without any grates. Rav Moshe says, you know, I don't see anyone that washes dishes in a sink without any grates. Everyone at least uses a grate at the bottom of the sink. Says Rav Moshe, that's perfectly fine. That's all you need. No basins, just use a grate. This is Rav Moshe Feinstein. This is not a Das Yachid. Rav Moshe Feinstein, Halacha B'maisa. Why? What's Rav Moshe's rationale? The basic underpinnings of Rav Moshe come from a machlokas between the Ramah and the Shach and Shulchan Aruch. In source 14 and 15, we have a machlokas almost about sinks. If you think about it, we know from both Kashrus and Shabbos, there are three types of vessels in the world. Two types of vessels, more precisely. Two types of vessels. Kli Rishon and Kli Sheni. Kli Rishon usually, you presume, cooks. Kli Sheni ain't a mevashel. What happens if I'm pouring from a Kli Rishon to a Kli Sheni, pouring from a vessel that was on the fire to a Kli Sheni? Iroi, that's called pouring. That's nishtahen nishtaher. It doesn't cook totally, but it's not totally cold. That's mevashel k'dei klipa. That cooks just the surface of whatever I'm pouring on. So Kli Rishon cooks. Kli Sheni doesn't cook. Iroi is in between. Iroi cooks partially. Iroi cooks just the upper level of the food or the vessel that you're pouring onto. K'dei klipa. The smallest amount you can just rub off. Says the Shulchan Aruch, with that background, what's the halacha 14? Im ira mayim roschim, if I pour boiling water, she'enon shabasar, v'lo shalchalav. It's not milk, it's not fleishuk. Pyre of water. Al kelim shabasar v'shalchalav v'yachad. On milchid and fleishuk kelim together, and the Ramah says clearly, afilu shuman Dabuk Bahem. I have dirty milk and kelim. Dirty flesh and kelim. I had lasagna Thursday night. There's still lasagna and cheese on my forks. I made meatballs for Shabbos. There's still meatballs on my forks. They're together in the same sink. I poured boiling water on those dishes. Says the Ramah, Hakol Shari. Everything is mutter. This is the Ramah. Ramah in Shulchan Aruch, Siman Sadi Hei. Why says the Ramah? Vein iri to tri rishon mamish. Pouring is not a tri rishon. Sheyase shakelim shemar aleim yivluz amizet. To make that the vessels are going to absorb one from the other. Says the Rama, milchig and fleshit kelim dirty together, pour boiling hot water on them, kashrul mahadrin. The Rama. Who disagrees? The Shach. And on the side of the Shulchan Aruch, the two Nosei Kelim, the two famous Bnei Plukta of the Shulchan Aruch are the Shach and the Taz. Says the Shach, source 15, Rama, I hear what you're saying. Well, I say it's not true. Achein l'nyindina nira d'nesru. I disagree. It's not true. L'maisa, there's a problem. So according to the Rama, real milchid, real fleishit together, one, they're enmeshed. One is al-gabe zeh. Knives and forks almost mixed together. Pour hot water, mutto l'gamri. Says the Shach, not so fast, I disagree. Says Rav Moshe Feinstein, an unbelievable chiddush. The chiddush which affects us not only for sinks, but back to Starbucks as well. Says Rav Moshe Feinstein, what's pshat in the machlokas between the Rama and the Shach? Rav Moshe says, Rav Moshe's tshuva is a little bit ambiguous. I'm going to present my understanding of Rav Moshe's tshuva. If you look it up yourself, you think Rav Moshe is saying something else, please feel free to disagree. But Rav Moshe's basic yisod is, if you think about pouring, think about the last time you poured something. Think about pouring from a kettle, let's say. When you pour from a kettle, what happens at the point of contact? There are really two things that happen every time you pour. The actual liquid that you pour goes straight down. It hits whatever you're pouring on. And there's a circle created by the splash. Can you relate to that? You pour. When it bounces, there's the actual point of impact, usually a very narrow area. And then there's a little splash, a ring created by the water splitting. Of course, it spreads, and then eventually that locus spreads, and it just goes in everywhere. But usually, if you think about pouring, you pour, and there's a precise point that it hits, and then there's a bit of a spread afterwards. That is the way we pour. Can you relate to that idea? You pour, there's the precise point and the circle around it. Says Rav Moshe. This is a chiddush. Rav Moshe says, this is a machlokas, Rama and Shach. According to the Rama, the only time iroi, pouring, can ever transfer flavor or cook something is at the exact point of contact, that tiny area that the liquid comes out of onto the substance. So as Rav Moshe, by definition, even if I have milchus and fleishos mixed together, lamaisa, the place is going to pour, let's say I pour on a knife which is milchid and a knife which is fleishos. There'll be a point of contact, the milchid, the water will go into the milchid spoon or fork and cook a little bit there, the fleishos part and cook there. But every point of contact is not going to transfer flavor to another part of the kli, because lamais, whenever you pour, there's a very minimal actual point of contact. So the little part that's going in the milchid fork will cook into the milchid fork, but it won't jump to the fleishos fork. The part that I'm cooking into the fleishos fork won't jump to the milchid fork, because all it really does is cook at the exact location it touches. Since iroi means it just cooks at the exact location it touches, that's all that pouring does. So if I am pouring on milchig and fleishig kelim, there's no way that they're going to transfer flavor. Because the point of contact for the milchig will stay milchig, point of fleishig for the fleishig will stay fleishig, but they're not going to mix. So as the Shach, Rama, you're being too kind. It's not true. Lamaisa, there's a pouring, has a ring around it. Whenever you pour, there's an inch or two around where you're pouring. The higher you pour from, the bigger the ring is. Lamaisa, that entire ring can transfer flavor. So says Rav Moshe, the Shach says, no. If you have, let's say, a milchig knife and a fleishig knife next to each other, or even one on top of the other, and I pour, there's a ring which comes around both of them, the entire ring will get cooked. Since the entire ring gets cooked, what could be within that ring? Both milchigs and fleishigs. So the Shach, that's a concern. So says Rav Moshe in source 16, in the second line in source 16, where it's bold. It's hard to see with the print a little bit what's bold, but if you look carefully, middle of the second line in source 16 is bold. Ava b'munachim zel zeh, if they're next to each other, at the nodin, even if they're touching, v'zeh itzel zeh, they're mamish one next to the other. K'she'ein ha'kiluach ho'ech al shneim, if the same spray is not going exactly on both of them, b'machim an adiyah, where they're touching, well, yes, they won't be usher. It's the exact point of Purim is going to be. And says Rav Moshe in Surah 17, "Im atyuach mamish hoech al shnei kelim." If you have a point, a pouring point with a circle around it, going on milk and feishuk together. B'zeh pridi, that's machokas Rama and Shach. Dilei Rama, af b'shuman davuk al shel basar v'al shel chalav lo yasu zemizeh. Milk and feishuk kelim are never a concern. Because there's never a point the milk part will stay milk and the fleshy part will stay fleshy. They can never mix with each other. According to the Shach, it's aser bevadai b'yesh shuman davar toleim. If there is shuman, if there is grease on them, they're going to get intertwined because there's a circle of pouring. That circle of pouring could have some milk and some fleshy kalim on in the same point. That's going to become treif. But says Rav Moshe, machokas Rama and Shach. Now back to sink. Says Rav Moshe, think about your sink at home. What happens to your sink? Let's say you have boiling hot milk. You couldn't sleep, so you boil up some milk in order to drink before you go to sleep. Pour that boiling hot milk into the sink. So the area where the sink becomes milked is milked. Within 24 hours, are you going to pour hot meatballs right on that area, says Rav Moshe? Highly unlikely. And even if you do, if you put vessels in the sink, you need to have hot water where the actual forks and knives are touching that part of the sink in order to make the forks and knives straight, because we don't really care if the sink is straight. So you need so many variables, says Rav Moshe, to make a fork and knife in a sink straight. Number one, milchig, then fleishuk in the exact same point. And then vessels that have something pour on them the exact same point. Even the most macher opinion of the Shach would say it's almost impossible to make a sink transfer flavor into your vessels. Says Rav Moshe, Lamais, if you have grates in a sink, everything's okay. This is the Pesach of Rav Moshe Feinstein. Again, with this chiddush, that pouring is a very localized phenomenon, but it's true halacha Lamais, that's what minhag and klal, if you know, if you or anyone else just uses grates in the sink, it's based upon this tshuva in Rav Moshe Feinstein. So now let's, if we took Rav Moshe Feinstein, Zatzal, to Starbucks, what would Rav Moshe say? Would he say, "Oy vey, treif ham in the sink"? Rav Moshe say, the only way for flavor to transfer in a sink is to have milchigs and fleishigs, or treif and non-treif, exactly overlapping with one point of contact exactly, to say that's going to transfer the flavor? It's so unlikely, Rav Moshe would say that it's mutter. So in the eyes of Rav Moshe Feinstein, there should be absolutely no problem, even barring soap. Sinks don't create a problem of treif. Sinks are almost immune to treif. They're iruy. You're pouring from the faucet or from a spray. Maybe a localized area, but it's so hard to say there's any concern. The Ramah would definitely say it's okay. Even the Shach would say it's such a small area, there should be no concern. It's important to realize that even under Rav Moshe, it's very possible that if I have a situation of a ham sandwich on a plate, and then some of the real ham falls into a cup that I'm going to use for coffee, and hot water goes on that, what would Rav Moshe say? Rav Moshe would say that little area of the cup is still treif. A very small area of the cup is treif. So now think about it. If I have a very small area of a cup that's treif, and I fill up the entire cup with steamed milk or with coffee, what rule do we have there? Bitl b'shishim. A small area of a cup that's treif. Let's say on that locus that Rav Moshe talked about, there's going to be some treif. L'maisa, the beverage you're having is bitl b'shishim. So Rav Moshe negated most situations, even the situations where there's going to be some sort of pouring, it's going to make a very local area treif. It's irrelevant as far as the beverage you're going to be drinking. Kiva. You're saying that's even better. That's even better. I'm saying worst case scenario, let's say you consider there's blia, there's either shuman or even blia flavor in the kli. It's even better, for sure. I'm saying worst case scenario, 100%. Oh, so what are envat in iskuchat kliwa? So it depends. That's a discussion we have. If something is made to sell commercially, then it's going to be considered part of, even though they're not being mevatel, the iser for me, But if it's made to sell commercially and they're relying on bittul, that's a problem. But here, the barrister is not relying on bittul. They're just doing what they do normally. I happen to know that there might be kulay haivu'ulay. Maybe there's some treif. That's not bittul asur chatchila. Because they're not really, there's no intention. It's not as if they have, let's say, a vegetable with bugs. They say, oh, we're going to blend it, it'll be bittul. They don't know there's any yisrael to that. They don't even know what they're doing b'chlal. To say that's considered bittul asur chatchila is a tremendous chiddush. So according to Rav Moshe Feinstein, we've seen, first of all, he explains why there are people that use grates and sinks, because Rav Moshe says, maximum, if we're going to the most machmir opinion of the Shach, all we have is a tiny area that's going to become treif. So let's say that's the worst case scenario in Starbucks, so let's say if I have a situation of the cup, on the inside of the cup, there's mamish ham in here, let's say, as the people pointed out, that's usually not going to happen, let's say there's mamish ham, and the sink goes on it, all that becomes treif is a tiny area, much smaller than this circle on my cup, which is going to make that going to become a treif. Lamaisa, for that to go into coffee, it'll be definitely bottle. Not only that, the CRC themselves point out, let's say, worst case scenario, you hold, not like Ramosha's chiddush. Ramosha is a chiddush, admittedly. Let's say for some reason you have ham galore in your sink, whether it's Starbucks or some other imitation, which doesn't really have such good sanitary procedures. There's ham galore in the sink, and there's grease galore all over a cup they're going to use for coffee in an hour for you. And they turn on the hot water, and it goes onto every part of that cup. Lamaisa, the maximum Eroi pouring ever does is mevashel, it cooks the klipa. It only cooks the outer layer. Eroi can never penetrate an entire vessel or an entire piece of meat or an entire piece of milk, an entire piece of cheese. It just can't do it. Eroi means Eroi only cooks the external layer of something. Which means even if I have ham on a cup or on a cup they're going to use to make a steamed milk for a latte and there's hot water going on it, what's going to happen? Maximum that's going to become a treif is the external layer. So the CRC did research in source 18. They said the ratio of beverage to metal in the entire cup, in the metal cups used in the espresso bar, for those that are unfamiliar, one of the brachos Hashem gave the world is the invention of a cafe latte. Cafe latte, there's two things. One's a latte, one's a cappuccino, different ways of making them. But the essence of a cafe latte is espresso coffee which is brewed at high pressure, and steamed milk. The milk is steamed with a wand, which is used only for milk, so that should not have any kashrus concern in most situations. But the wand doesn't come off the espresso machine, but the cup is washed in the sink. Lamaisa, they pointed out, the ratio of drink to cup of metal is usually either 6.3 to 1, 8.4 to 1, or 10.5 to 1. That's the entire metal compared to the entire volume of the cup. But we just said, what's the maximum amount that a cup can contain of non-kosher? Only the external layer. Eroi pouring only cooks the external layer of something. It only cooks the external layer of something. So lamaisa, we have, again, bittul b'shishim. Absolutely no concern. It's important to realize the CRC is bothered, as I pointed out before, they're saying, lamaisa, you're right. So Abba, you pointed out very beautifully the idea of en ratu nesu chatchila. But leaving that out, in general, even if it's not a halachic sense, in ratu nesu chatchila, come on, would we do this in our own homes? Okay, it's an important point to reckon with. But lamaisa, as far as halacha is concerned, there seems to be no kashrus concerns. There are two more points. Number one, there are wonderful drinks that Starbucks serves that contain coffee, flavors, milk. But to best of my knowledge, not one drink in the entire Starbucks repertoire has coffee and meat. Ever hear of coffee and meat mixed together? Disgusting. As the CRC themselves point out, it's very possible that is no Saint Tom of Gam. Even if there's treif ham, real treif ham, that fell into my coffee, lamaisa, it makes my coffee taste worse, not better. In fact, even if that wouldn't be true in the corner mom and pop shop, in Starbucks that I'm paying $4 for a cup of coffee, I want the best coffee I can have. Meat in my coffee? Ugh. No Saint Tom Lashtam. The CRC is reluctant to rely on that because they point out, Lamaisa, is it really true that you sample every mixture that Starbucks has with meat and see if it really tastes bad? But as a person pointed out to me from another kashrus organization, a well-known kashrus organization, come on, meat and coffee, no sin tam uftam, nishta vas to redden, there's nothing to talk about b'chol. And the last point is that after Starbucks washes the dishes in the sink, they sterilize them in a dish machine. But let's say they didn't. Let's say we're not talking about Starbucks anymore, we're talking about Dunkin' Donuts or some other store that uses a dishwasher. What's the halacha with dishwashers? Dishwashers? Are they kosher? They treif? How many dishwashers do you need in your house? My wife and I joke that when we lived in Washington Heights, we had four dishwashers. My right hand, my left hand, my wife's right hand, my wife's left hand. I tried to make sure it was mine more than hers. It wasn't always so successful. But the dishwashers is also another misunderstood topic in Halachos of Kashrus. But here, bringing it home to Tree Gardens Hills, we have Rav Noach Eisen Obam Shlita as the Shoel in Idris Moshe in Source 19. Rabbi Obam asked Rav Moshe, I see you wrote in Shuvan, in an earlier Shuvan Arachayim, that you can use the same dishwasher, Rav Moshe Feinstein, same dishwasher, for milchuks and fleishuks, not at the same time. Rav Moshe! Said Rabbi Obam, Lamaisa, I don't understand. Mashkosev, Rav Moshe, what you wrote, the Madiach HaKelim, who tli basar, v'amayim islashum shama, umuvan klal, says Rav Moshe, Rav Obam, you were concerned that there is actual cooking of milk or cooking of meat in a dishwasher? That's not true. What happens in a dishwasher? For those that have been scared to open up the dishwashers while they're on cycles, which you should be, the dishwasher essentially is, seems like Machalka to Rav Moshe and Rav Obam. Rav Moshe says it's Iroi, it's just pouring. Rav Obam says there's actual cooking of hot water in there. So how do we reconcile Machalka to Rav Moshe Feinstein and Rav Obam? Who's right? Both. The way a dishwasher works is that there's an element at the bottom of the dishwasher that heats up water. That's true. It actually heats up the water. And then it's forced, as the old-fashioned lawn sprinklers that sometimes go around and round and round, it's forced through pressure into the wand, the bar that you sometimes see at the bottom of dishwashers. And since the water, and that goes around and around and round, that does Iroi, it pours, in the reverse direction, it pours up, onto all the dishes. So Rabbi Obam is really right that the water is being cooked there, but it's cooked to the bottom. What touches the dishes is Iroi. Says Rav Moshe, Iroi, our old friend, pouring. No concern. Iroi, so this Iroi, this pouring of milchid, take the milchid out, wash facials, absolutely no concern. Back to our situation. Let's say in Dunkin' Donuts or in 7-Eleven, they put milk and meat, dishes, in the same dishwasher. We don't do that in most kosher houses. But number one, there might be soap. And soap was the best number one friend in the kitchen. But number two, aside from the issue of soap, Rav Moshe points out that Iroi, what's the maximum Iroi does? It only cooks at the exact point of contact. So the only way for something to be treif in a dishwasher is if you have a milchid and fleishuk fork, let's say, intertwined together, or knives zel dab zel, smushed together, that the Iroi cooks in that specific area. In that specific area, so the maisa, if it's in that specific area, the rest of the fork is okay, the other forks, the other knives, the other spoons, the other cups are okay. So maybe in certain situations there is a problem that I would not want to have in my house, but in most situations there's an issue of bittul. And even if you don't live in Moshe Feinstein, even if the general area is going to be treif, there's so much more kosher, we're going to presume there's going to be bittul, and that would be definitely okay. In conclusion, we discussed several issues as far as coffee is concerned. Number one, we went through the issue of Vishalakum. Vishalakum is not cooked by a non-Jew, and the postman points out, based upon Tosus, and verified by later Achronim, that since the main issue in Kofi, the main ingredient in Kofi is water, there's no problem. Then we discuss the issue of Kofi bars and Kofi houses altogether. Since an issue of the Rabbanon is having Sheikhar, having beverages, the Chafz Adam expands to any beverage in a non-Jewish house because of fraternizing with Nachrim. We want to Chas V'Shalom make sure we remember not to intermarry. So even though Rav Shechtner will point out that's a concern in Starbucks, one might argue that since Starbucks is really a publicly held company or owned by a Jew, it would be okay. On the other hand, one might say it's the sensitivity in general that we have to create within ourselves. It's better to shomer nafsho yirchak mehem. You could see both ways. What of the actual kashrus of Starbucks itself? So, in the store itself, there are kosher ingredients and there are treif ingredients. The twain shall never meet until the store closes or until they clean up. When they clean up, they put everything into a sink. So sinks are major machlokas. We took a break for a minute and went through several issues with sinks to bring them back to Starbucks. Number one, soap. Soap's the best thing invented for kitchens, both in cleanliness and in kashrus. Since there's soap in most situations, in most kitchens, most dishwashers, most sinks, soap's the panacea. Everything's okay. Even if there's no soap, machlokas, two great posters, the Chassid Chacham and Rav Moshe, how you should use a sink at any kosher home, with ramifications for Starbucks. Mith Chassid Chacham says, treif! Sinks are a big problem. Use basins. And that might be a concern in Starbucks as well. But Rav Moshe says, no, take a step back. Look, the Ramah says the only time you can have something which is cooked is mamish, the specific area they touch, which is almost never going to happen because two vessels are usually separate from each other by some sort of fraction of an inch. Even the shaft that's machmir is only going to be in a situation of a certain lotus that the pouring is going to be on, not the rest of the area. So Rav Moshe says, sinks are never treif, vessels and sinks are never treif, everything's okay, and certainly if you use racks, toshel and mahadrin. And Rav Moshe says, you don't know, it's a nice idea to use basins, but it's definitely not so necessary. You don't have to be mashriach yourself so much. Back to Starbucks, the same thing happens in Starbucks. Maybe, just maybe, according to Rav Moshe, the actual area that the ham touches a cup will be treif, but it's such a small area, there's no concern. And since it's such a small area, we mentioned there's two additional points. Number one, it's only klei klip, only the external part of that cup. And number two, the ratio of drink to cup is great. So much that we have bittul b'shishim. So even though it might be that the vessel you're using has some treif in it, by the time you have your coffee, there's nothing to talk about. Benitosef was there. Beyond that, cafe au lait, cafe latte, cafe americano, cappuccino, no cafe a carne, no cafe with meat. And if there's no cafe with meat, meat might be very simply no sinam of dam. It makes the meat, it makes the coffee taste worse. That's to make a treif. No problem at all. Then we ended with the issue of dishwashers. Dishwashers themselves are a subject of discussion. But Rav Moshe finds in his Meitil, he points that dishwashers essentially are really iroi. There's pouring. Since there's pouring, the only concern we would have is the actual point they touch. Lamaisa, the rest of the area should be totally fine. So even if you have a fork and knife that are treif, and you're going to use that, a spoon, enmeshed with those, spoon for your latte, the amount of treif in that is so small, it's probably going to be batel, and there should be no concern. So it's important to realize that this year, we're not coming to a psak halacha, especially since the CRC's concern is so much more hardasha, rather than halacha. But it's important to realize that both studies have a lot of validity. The CRC has a long tshuva, which they recommend people not using Starbucks. And there are other organizations that don't necessarily say mefurish that think, betuv tam vadas, you can buy lattes, it's totally fine. There's definitely a large halakhic basis to justify this practice, l'chad chila. Yes?
I recently saw an article about that there are pinam and azasrim using Starbucks unless you're a traveler.
Interesting. I'm not sure. I've heard that the Star K did adopt some of the CRC's. I heard about that article. I'm not sure exactly what they're saying. It's hard for me to say they're
very similar to what the CRC.
Yeah, so you definitely see some of the issues, but it's hard to. Whenever you're saying something is mutter when you're traveling, you realize that there's some sort of issue. Yesh liashid b'dieved. The question is, how b'dieved is it? Is it really considered? If I want to relax and appreciate one of the Tanudi Olam Hazeh, a cafe latte with hazelnut, taffy nut flavor, cafe latte with taffy nut. Might be the other.
Can I ask you another question?
Please.
If you're getting the cup, if they don't serve anything in cups, for instance, many stores in Manhattan don't serve anything in a cup, they will only give you a paper cup.
So it's true. It's
and
a point. In fact, not only that, you get 10 cents off if you bring your own cups to Starbucks instead of using their cup. Oh. So Lamaisa, the CRC says if you use all disposable kelim, let's say if you ask them to make your latte in a disposable cup. Now it's important to realize whenever you see someone drinking a Starbucks latte, that was made with a metal cup. They steamed the milk with the metal cup and they poured it into a disposable cup so you can take it home or drink it in the store. If they make the steamed milk in a disposable cup, even the CRC is made though, but that's usually hard to hard to do, but that even they say there would be no concern because there's no tailor you're using from Starbucks except for milk and their wand. The point to realize also that there are a plethora of kashrus issues that apply in Starbucks. Someone pointed out to me, a Rebbe in a high school pointed out that one of his Talmidim was concerned, hey, you can buy anything in Starbucks. People, I see Jews going there all the time. So it's important to realize that, of course, the treif foods, the sandwiches, the pastries are treif. Frappuccinos are very serious concern, although Rav Charlap is the Rav Machshir on frappuccinos in a bottle, because that's produced by Pepsi Cola, the ones that are you can buy in a supermarket. Frappuccinos in Starbucks themselves are highly questionable. So it's important to realize we're not discussing the issue of which products are kosher or not as far as the kosher certification is concerned. We're talking about innocuous beverages themselves and the influence of non-kosher beverages on those altogether. A large part of tonight's discussion centered on the concepts of kashrus and kelim. It's interesting to note, of all parshios, Parshas Matos talks about Ulei Tre Midyan, the source for Moshe of kashrus, because Klal Yisrael went to war, they received kelim from the non-Jews. In order to use them, they had to purge them from the non-kosher flavors that existed in them. For that parsha, we have two different concepts. Number one is the parsha of Hadolas Kelim, of keeping kosher, a kosher home as far as vessels are concerned. And number two is Tvilas Kelim. Machlokas Rashi in the Ramban, Tvilas Kelim is Minatara Midrabanan, but it seems to have its roots in this week's parsha as well. You should put Kelim in water. Very interesting din. When I go to the store and buy a kli, I put it in water. The Beis Yosef quotes from the Isser V'Heter, the Rishonim, time of the Krah, a rationale, a reason for why we do Tfilas Kelim with new vessels. Says the Beis Yosef from the Isser V'Heter, a Jewish home is so sacred, so special, so phenomenal, before a simple spoon, a plain fork, a basic pot enters our threshold, it has to undergo geirus. It's not a vart. This is Tosfos Isser V'Heter quoting this from the Yerushalmi, Talmud Yerushalmi. Geirus on Kelim. That's the sanctity of the Jewish home. That's what we have a chiv of Tzvilas Kelim. And the Maybrook family, when we think of a home, we think of the home, the chinuch that we got from Imenu Moraseinu, as your mother. Mami was a paradigm Eshus Chayim Miyimtza, a person who created our chinuch. To many of you that came, that knew my mother, you knew what a special person she was. To those that know me, my brother Eliezer, my sister Gila, my sister Devorah, each one of us are not only who we are because of my mother, but each of our personalities reflect different aspects of her. And although 8 years after my mother's patira, the pain is always there. As I sometimes discuss with my father, Nebuch, people should never know of it. When a person loses an arm, Hashem made Nefilas Habari, the body heals, but the arm doesn't grow back. And Imenu Moraseinu is irreplaceable. But there's a certain nechama that we all have in knowing that she's within each one of us. Not just in theory, because we're her children, but my personality, my sister's personality, my brother's personality, and our other sister's personality reflect who our mother was. A person who had the proper priorities in life, of Torah, of Avodas Hashem, of Yiras Shemayim, balancing both the beauty of the world in general and the beauty of Torah. Person who was Matnas Archim, I had friends who used to say to me, Shmuel, you know, when we used to come to your house for Shabbos, it was really not because of you. It was your mother made us feel so welcome. People that often tell me, my smile reflects my mother. Those are words that make, that are painful, but also words of friendless nechama. Because Imeinu Maraseinu lives on through her children. So for all those that came, we appreciate the fact that you came, whether your motivation was specifically to hear about Starbucks or to be mechabed our mother, whether you knew her or through any one of us. It's a tremendous zechus we have to share Torah and Mother's Yard site with you. And specifically, the Shulchan Aruch tells us from the Gemara that during the entire year of Avelus, a family should view it as a certain din metucha. There's a certain din Hashem meted out on the family. But says the Shulchan Aruch, halacha maisa, one of the few divrei agada that are passed in the Shulchan Aruch, nolad ben zachar nisrapis kol mishpacha. If a boy is born during the year, it's a siman hashemayim of refuah. It's a very special thing that although I'm here together with my dear wife Chani, who gives me so much support, and my sister Vila, with my dear brother-in-law with Daniel, and my brother Eliezer, with our dear sister-in-law Sarah, our brother-in-law, our dear brother-in-law David Wasuof is here, but my sister, our youngest sister Devara Bracha, is not here because she came out of the hospital today because the baby, the Nolad Ben Zachar, the baby boy that she had born yesterday, Shalom Zachar, is the Shabbos, Baruch Hashem. It's very interesting that Mamish around the yard site, she had the baby the day before the yard site, the Shalom Zachar is the day after the yard site, and although there's no din on the family, the idea of Nolad Ben Zachar, the simcha of having a Ben Zachar, still brings us nechama. We should be Zachar this time of year, during the 3 weeks, whether we're Sfardi or Ashkenazi, is a time of Sarah Ben Amitzarim. It's time of sorrow for all of Klal Yisrael. But as we approach Tisha B'Av, it should be a day, Bez Vashem, that both sorrows that we have in private and sorrows that we have as a tzibur, we should see come to an end. As Hashem brings us the nechama that we all wait for, both publicly and privately, Uva L'Tzion Goel V'mheira Yamein. Rav Hanani ben Nachashi Omar, Ratza, the Baruch Hu, Zakos Es Yisrael, Leticha, Kiri Lehem, Torah Umitzvos, Shneamar, Adonai Chafetz, Laman Tzidko, Yadil Torah, V'yadir, Yisvadal, V'yiskadash, Shemei Rabo, Yoma Divra Firusei, Yavlech Malchusei, Fiatzmach Portonei, Fikarev Mishichei, Bechayechon, Uvyamechon, Uvechaye de Chobes Yisrael, Bagolo Vizman Kariv, Vimru Amei, Yemei Yeshemei Rabo Vivarach, Uyolam Uyomei Yomayo, Yisparach, Yishabach, Yispar, Yisramam, Yisnasei, Yishadar, Yisalev, Yishalau, Shmei Kudushabarichu, Laela min Kobri Chosa, Vishirosa, Tushbachosa, Venechemosa, Yamiran, Vialma, Vimru, Amen. A Yisrael, Barbanon, Baltamidehom, Balkotamidehom, Yalkoman, Yostrim Yaraisa, Yvasuadin, Yvasar, Vasar, Yehavahon, Lachon, Shomar Balk, Yinov, Christopher Achamin, the Chayin Arichin, Musane Richayo for Kana, Minkadam, Abuhon Yvishmael, Yarab, Yemru, Amen. Yehei, Shlomar Rabba Min Shemaya, V'chayim Tovim Aleinu, V'yalko Yisrael, V'imru Amen. Ose Shalom Amramav, Purachmav Yose Shalom Aleinu, V'yalko Yisrael, V'imru Amen. We'll have a marriage in a minute.
plenty of service. In a regular call, we would just
okay, show us.
Yes.
The regular coffee that they brew there, so the brew basket.